Okay, so I called the today's talk is everything is optional. So hopefully the first part of this talk is going to involve a lot of people chiming in with ideas. Because I wanted to ask, what kinds of activities in your life do you not regard as optional? And I'm really meaning like specifically activities here. So you may not regard it as optional to like in terms of kind of your values or behavior, but you may not regard it as optional to like be honest or kind or something like that. But we're not talking about those generalities, but more like, well, what is an activity that you feel is mandatory because you're trying to be kind or whatever? So we're really focusing on things that you do. So not optional, like compulsory, forced, required, necessary, mandatory. That's going to be my go-to word for this. Unavoidable, requisite, imperative, obligatory. So obviously our work, exertion or effort directed to produce or accomplish something, productive activity. So certainly our work to make money, to support ourselves and our families is something that tends to feel obligatory or mandatory. But I want to just open it up to other ideas. Could you grab me a pen? I think there's one out by the donation box. Yeshe.
I have a question.
Yeah.
What if you see some of these so-called obligations as choices that you make rather than as obligations? Because when I think about it, I breathe. So that's something that happens. I choose to go to work, but I'm not required to go to work. It's not an obligation.
Well, you're getting ahead of me because that's my whole point today.
Okay.
So, I mean, basically, it does have to do with how do you look at it, right?
Okay.
So I'm just
I
like,
don't
let's.
have much on that list for.
Okay, cool. But then let's chime
Okay.
in just about things that we tend to. I mean, I'll just cop to like. I find it very difficult not to view cleaning my house as mandatory.
Yes.
I have it's been, that's not something that I would choose to do ever. Not a moment of it. So that's my example. Leah. Oh, you're still muted.
Sorry, you stole my thunder because that's what I was gonna say. But also, it's like never would I. And being sick for a couple of weeks has been great to observe the state of my house when I do not clean it. I can still technically live in it. I mean, it's fine, but also, I was thinking walking my dog. That specifically I must do, or he is non exercised. He needs to be walked. That's all I got.
Other, I mean, there's got to be a nice list of things out there. Ruth Ann.
Mandatory, I think, other things being equal, for me to be civil in whatever social situation I might be in. By social, I mean when I'm not with myself. If something surprises me, disappoints me, to maybe not engage in haphazard cursing, but just at least mandatory be civil before I verbalize.
Right. And all kinds of manner of like politeness, biting your tongue, pretending to be interested when you're really not, like, these kind of obligatory social responses. Other ideas.
So you're looking for things that we consider mandatory.
That, I mean, maybe sometimes you manage to have a good attitude toward them, like Yeshe Tzoki was talking about, but for the most part, just like, yes, we got it. This has to happen.
Okay.
And yeah.
When you answer with all those words, I get confused. For things that are mandatory, the
yes.
answer is yes.
Okay. Yes, mandatory.
I had two. Now I can only think of one, but it is mandatory for me to water my garden during a heat wave. I had another one. I'll just shatter that one.
All right. Mark.
Meeting your commitments without mm-hmm. changing your mind, even if circumstances change. Mm-hmm.
Brian.
Gotta sit or I become an ogre. You know, just, you know.
You've got to sit?
Well, I've got to meditate or I'm just, you know, it's bad. It's not good. I gotta do something physical. Gotta kind of work out or I become an ogre. And thirdly, I gotta do... kind of new stuff. I gotta be learning stuff or pushing stuff or yes, I become an ogre. So those are nice.
All right. Ellen.
If you choose to be a parent or have pets, I think it's mandatory to care for them the best you can, whatever that means. But and everybody has a different sense of what that means, but just care for them the best you can.
Stuart.
I was going to say agree with my wife. but there's more to it than that. I find it mandatory to remember that I'm not the only person in the room and that not necessarily it's mandatory to consider other people as well as yourself. And not necessarily put yourself first or your opinions first.
Thank you. So yes, the list could go on. Grocery shopping, cooking. So when we are doing something which doesn't feel optional, when it feels mandatory, and this may not always be the case, but you know, what's your attitude? How does your attitude end up sometimes when you're doing these things?
Grim.
Anger.
Leah?
Yeah, I just get really good at thinking about something else. Mm-hmm. Like my head is I'm in my happy place. I'm thinking about, you know, something else.
Perhaps anticipating what you get to do after this thing is done. Sabrina.
Initially resentment, but then also recognizing that what I have to do is something I get to do.
Well, that's the next step. Again, my little, my line today. Boredom. Boredom is an interesting experience. If you really examine it, it's like, I don't know, it's just like a dissatisfaction with this moment, just a dissatisfaction with the way things are or the way things are unfolding. Impatience, lack of appreciation or mindfulness, hurrying to get to the other things that we're going to do. Anger, as somebody said, when we encounter obstacles because we're just trying to get this damn thing done, you know, sense of busyness and stress. So, shifting gears, what are some things you feel or usually relate to as optional? Things you do. Mark.
Cleaning the house and grocery shopping.
Reaching out in a social way.
Joan says reaching out in a social way to people that you enjoy, yes. I'm assuming.
Yes.
Somebody says reading a book. Going hiking. For me, it's playing the accordion, getting to spend some time in my yard. And interesting, if I go too many days without having the opportunity to do those things, I start to get pretty irritable and resentful. Playing the piano.
Exercise, because I like the endorphins that come from it, which also keep me pain-free.
Hmm. I view exercise as mandatory and kind of relate to it that I think it's pretty boring and I resent the time it takes. And yet, obviously the same activity you can relate to very differently. And I do take the opportunity to listen to audiobooks now while I'm exercising, so I kind of enjoy it. Brian, oh, you're still muted.
Attending class or even speaking in class.
Nice. And then to go back to that, somebody said about the end of the social niceties, you know, that we are usually have to or feel is pretty mandatory. It's also very nice then when we're around people we're very comfortable with and we can just be ourselves and express ourselves freely and not worry about that. First, and certainly, you know, travel or vacation. You know, I'm going to go to the coast for a couple nights next week and just walking on the beach and, you know, as long as you feel like it, there's no deadline. But then, of course, even as we head toward these optional activities, or we're in the middle of them, something can easily draw us into mandatory mode instead, right? Like something gets in the way of us getting, you know, like getting busy and stressed in order to go on our vacation. Or, you know, something gets in the way of it. Problem that needs to be solved. And I'm settling down to just, you know, almost every evening, my husband and I just settle on the couch with the pets. You know, we watch series on Netflix and Amazon and whatever, you know, and then sometimes there's a technical problem. And it's just, this is a completely optional activity. We have no like timeline, nothing, but like, oh, my dad's good. What's up with this remote? You know, like just go immediately out of that option. So how much of your day Do you feel that you are in mandatory mode? And it's interesting, if you play this kind of mental game with yourself, if you can just kind of imagine the ease and appreciation and mindfulness, right? Like when we're doing something optional, we're choosing to do it. We usually pay attention to it. We try to enjoy it. We try to take our time with it. So you kind of imagine that attitude and then kind of mentally compare that with your attitude as you're, you know, sitting in stop and go traffic, or you're, you know, you go into Winco and it's once again super busy, almost all the carts are gone, so you know the store is going to be a complete zoo. Like, compare those attitudes. Compare your attitude when something is optional to, you know, having to spend time with a difficult family member. You're maintaining this relationship, but, you know, it's a real bore or a chore or something to be around this person. Let's see, somebody say something in the chat. Oh, trying to, yeah, create a wonderful space in your garden rather than being stressed about getting the work done. Yeah, that's definitely one that when I go out in my garden, it's very easy to just see all the weeds and this needs to happen and that needs to happen. And like, and then it doesn't feel optional anymore, right? Then it feels like a big burden. And that's ironically too, is when you examine some of the things that you end up like, if you list the things you need to do in a given day, right? I have to do this and I have to do that. And then I have to do this. And then I have to go to my accordion lesson. And then I have to, you know, like, it's like, wait a second, wait, back up there. Like, that was on the optional list, but now it's made it onto the mandatory list, right? Because kind of like Mark says, now we've made a commitment to it or whatever. So these things can easily start to feel mandatory. Think about the rest of your day today. Unless you live alone and are retired, and maybe if that's even the case for you, depending on your personality, you may still have a long list of things that need to be done today, that you plan to do. To what extent do any of these things feel optional? Or if Sunday's kind of a relaxing day for you, but you go to work tomorrow, you know, how do you relate to a work day? So I see this as dukkha as manifested in our everyday activities, our everyday lives. Dukkha meaning often translated as suffering, but stress, dissatisfactoriness, which the Buddha taught arises from desire, but not from elaborate, like, you know, like sensual desire or something like that. It's desire for things to be other than how they are. Or I like to flip that sometimes. It's resistance to how things are. So we don't want to be doing this thing, or we want it to be done already, or we want it to be going more quickly. So this can be powerful or subtle. Obviously, there's some things we just hate doing, and go completely into that resentful mandatory mode, and we're just trying to get it done as quickly as possible. Other things may not be so bad, but they're not what we really want to be doing, right? And I think of how easy it is if you do work like a 9-to-5 job or something to just like, just be thinking about the weekend, you know, just be like, I get through all of this, but then. So dukkha as it manifests in the activities of everyday life. And this is how we spend, like, this is most of our life, most of our time. We spend some time sitting zazen. We spend some time in retreat. We spend some time doing Dharma study. But most of the time, we're just going around living our everyday life. So what if we were, as a few people have suggested already, what if we were able to be at ease in the moment, mindful and appreciative during all or at least more of our activities? Now, sometimes that seems like, well, isn't that kind of by definition impossible? And something isn't optional. How do we pretend that it's optional? Where something's unpleasant. I don't know. I don't have much luck convincing myself that it's pleasant when it's unpleasant. If something doesn't come easily or naturally, something has a deadline, it's imperative, it's stressful. So we can't pretend or make ourselves like something or enjoy something. I mean, and there are some activities you can do this with. Like, you know, when I first got involved with Buddhism and the suggestion that I might be mindful during my everyday activities instead of just getting through them, right? And then of course the classic suggestion is that you wash dishes mindfully. Of course, most of us just use dishwashers now, but you know, usually there's at least a few things that you put in the warm soapy water and you wash, and without trying to rush and without trying to get on to something else, to just enjoy it. I mean, I have to say, like, you know, I experimented with that a few times and found it very satisfying. And now it's just, you know, I'm like, yeah, that's enough. You know, but theoretically you could make a practice of relating to that activity that way. Or some people end up finding, you know, they really do the practice of when they're sitting in traffic, just letting go of that sense of hurry and rush, and just we're going to go as fast as we go. So we can definitely do those kinds of mindfulness things to make some of our activities less onerous. But some of them, I mean, even if you manage to do that, chances are there are still some which just, you know, like I said, that spending time with a really difficult family member, and you're just like, just waiting for the minutes to pass, dealing with a giant bureaucracy in order to get something addressed, and getting, you know, sent from person to person, and nobody will take any responsibility, to just like, this is optional, I'm enjoying this. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's difficult. So sometimes we can change our attitude willfully, and that's cool. One neat exercise, if anybody knows where this is or finds it, please let me know. I thought it was in Enkyo O'Hara's book, but I couldn't find it today. So I read it somewhere else. But anyway, that she would change the language whenever she would be saying, I have to do this, I have to do that. She would change it to, I get to do this thing. You know, and really it does open your mind up to these possibilities. Like, and actually post-COVID, I think we all kind of have more of a sense of that, right? I get to go to the grocery store and I don't even have to wear a mask. Like, I get to spend time with these family members. I get to do this. I still have the health. I still have the freedom. We still live in a peaceful place where we can do these things. So sometimes just doing that little exercise might help. But at an even deeper level, what do we really mean when we think something is not optional? So I've told this story before, but I was at a retreat led by Chosen Bays, and she told a story of a dream that she had, where she had died and gone to heaven, and her husband had died before her, and he was already there. So he was showing her around, and he was showing her, like, you know, this is where you can, you know, get something to eat, and this is, you know, showing her around heaven. And then she noticed like a really dilapidated, rundown barn or building, and she was like, you know, this is heaven, like, shouldn't that be taken care of or something? And he said, it's optional. So mandatory, you know, it means that the outcome, the result, the goal is necessary, or else. Or else what? Or else we'll end up homeless. We'll end up sick and in pain. we'll end up an ogre. Our relationships will fall apart. Our life will become unworkable and chaotic. Because if you never clean your house, you'd never pay your taxes, you never take care of the leaky roof, everything's going to fall apart. Okay, so there's some practical or else. So it's useful to examine your own mind when something feels mandatory. You know, what is the or else? What is the ultimate reason you are doing this thing? And often, as people have brought up already, you will recognize that somewhere along the line, you are making a choice. You are choosing to take care of the people and things around you. You are choosing to go get some good food and to make yourself a healthy meal so that, you know, you maintain your health, you feel good. You're choosing to maintain a relationship with a difficult relative, even though they're not much fun to be around. You've looked at that and you've decided that that is worth it. You're choosing to make your way to the Zen Center by car or motorcycle or bus in order to sit with Sangha. So this element of choice and freedom and agency, this is what the Buddha discovered. We do not have to be victims to our circumstances. We can find freedom from dukkha no matter what is happening. Is it really a choice? Working at a job that isn't particularly fulfilling, perhaps, versus homelessness, taking care of your health or sliding into sickness and pain, taking care of your children versus abandoning your responsibilities, is that really an option? And at a practical level, no. Like, if you tie it to, you know, in order to, right? It is necessary to do this in order to, you know, fulfill this particular outcome. But at an even deeper level, below the practical level, when things feel really mandatory, we're attached to a particular outcome in the sense that we have attached it to ourself. That's the way that I like to interpret attachment in Buddhism and Zen. I like to think of being a vacuum cleaner and that there's a bunch of attachments and you've added a bunch of attachments. Like, you know, this is all me now. I've attached it to my sense of self. So we become to it attached to a particular outcome. And when we contemplate an outcome and we get this internal sense of like, that cannot happen. That cannot happen. When the outcome is unthinkable, it's terrifying. It's something we cannot even allow our minds to contemplate. What will I become? What if I can't live with myself? Will life become absolutely unbearable? What if I die? When you examine these things at this existential level, below the level of the practical, you will discover real concern. You will discover real concern and compassion for others. But that's not going to actually be attached to this sense of compulsion. When you discover and you look down deeply into your sense of, you know, your deepest motivations, and you want to take care of your kids, once again, that is going to be like a choice, right? That is going to be a positive, energizing motivation, not a sense of this kind of compulsion, this sense that something is mandatory. The sense of something being mandatory at an existential level is all about our sense of small self, our limited ideas about who we are, our attempt to control our circumstances and experience, our identification with certain outcomes. I am responsible. I am trustworthy. I am a good parent. Or something that you could lose is an essential part of who you are. I am. Part of me is this house. Part of me is these relationships, my health, my capacities, this job. Even deeper than those stories and psychological conflations are essentially existential fears of nothingness, loss, obliteration, isolation, chaos. So in Zen, we work on symptoms, but also on the underlying illness. So we may work on our symptoms, like I was saying, in terms of just trying to think of things differently and practicing mindfulness and, you know, identifying things more as like a choice. But we're also looking to face those underlying fears, those underlying fundamental existential fears. Nothingness, loss, obliteration, isolation, chaos. In our Zazen, in our hearts and minds, we aim to let go of our mental map, to open up to reality with a capital R, and see there is no independent, autonomous, enduring self nature. Or, as I've found another word recently, thanks to Ayakema, I think, it's corelessness. We think there's some kind of core, but there's not. And yet we are very much alive, partaking in beingness. We're only imagining someone who could become nothing, or who could be destroyed by loss, or who could be cut off from life, or who could be overwhelmed by chaos. We're only imagining that problem. And if we can wake up in whatever limited way, more and more over time, to this level of truth, we're no longer as compelled to preserve and defend this illusory small self. And therefore, the actions we take, even if they are to preserve our life, fundamentally take care of our responsibilities, they're still our choice. They're still optional. It's not easy at all, but it is possible to engage all of our life activities as if they were optional. I will leave it there. Open it up for comments and questions. Anybody is new online, you can hit the reactions button in the bottom of the Zoom screen and choose raise hand, and then your little hand will go up until I call on you. Leo.
Yeah, this is, I see this to be true, this principle you're saying to come forward when I go on vacation. Because when I go on vacation, I get in this sense that I should be enjoying this, right? Because this is expensive and this is taking time. So I need to freaking enjoy this, okay? It's very important. This is brain telling me, very important that you enjoy this. So I get all the packing done, okay? So mandatory, you must mandatorily take care of all this stuff before you go, do all these things, pre-prepare, and then you must pack. And then you must do the travel part where you're either driving or sitting, you know, or whatever, and you're just going, God, I should be enjoying this because and then I get there and like, okay, I'm going to enjoy this. I can be literally standing on the beach and go, the enjoyment starts right now. This is, am I enjoying this yet? And then I sit there and ask myself, are you enjoying this enough? Is this worth it? Is like the whole time. So I'm terrible on vacation. I actually have the best time. The times when I'm the most relaxed is times when it sneaks up on me. Like the enjoyment part snuck up on me because I wasn't planning it. And I think this is exactly what you're saying. Part of what you're saying is when you let go of that feeling of mandatoriness, then sometimes the joy can just get you, sneak it right up on you.
And that's the irony of like, we fill our lives with so much stuff that is supposed to be enjoyable that we can ruin it. And like, that's, my husband is like he's not interested in vacations. He's not interested in holidays. He has no hobbies. Like he has nothing. Like, and I sort of, you know, I'm like, why wouldn't you want to do more? But for him, that like the spaciousness of each day is what he enjoys, right? And he watches me run around with like, now I gotta take care of the garden, I gotta get somebody to do this, and I gotta get somebody to do that. I've got my accordion lesson this afternoon, and like, and he's just like, Betty.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not in my shop, it's a little weird down here. I understand that we're talking about activities that we participate in, but how does this tie into to bigger picture things? Like, not that those aren't big picture, but I'm thinking of people that are in situations that are really difficult for them to choose a way out of, like homelessness, you know, like how does this tie into those kinds of things? Because you hear people say, like, oh, you'd be very judgy, like, oh, they're choosing to be homeless. They don't have to be homeless if they didn't want to be. So how does this tie into that?
Thank you for bringing that up. Because it's like, it's like if every Zen teaching is a medicine, you know, there should be like a disclaimer and side effects, right? Like may cause, I don't know, because that's the tricky thing. If we apply this idea to ourselves, you know, and we go about our daily lives and we understand it can be challenging, you know, certain activities or situations are going to be very challenging, but we can try to have a different attitude, whatever. But the second we turn this and we turn it outward, second we turn it and it's about anybody else and how they should be acting or reacting or using it as an excuse in any way, like it's being misused. It's like, that is not where this medicine is meant to go. The truth of it is though, that practice is possible no matter your circumstances. And in some senses, our conclusion that some people are in such difficult circumstances that they couldn't practice. And in practice, I'm meaning, you know, facing fears relating to your attitude so that maybe you feel more of a sense of freedom and choice or mindfulness or appreciation or whatever. You know, to think that somebody might be in such difficult circumstances they couldn't do that is kind of writing them off. And similarly, we can live in a little bit of a fear that like, if things get bad enough, maybe I'm just going to be miserable and there'll be nothing I can do about it. It is more difficult, right? It's more difficult to practice when, you know, we're really being faced with pain and injustice and chaos and all these kinds of things, but it is still possible. It is still possible. But that choice that we're talking about is a very different, it's a different kind of choice than what people are implying, that somebody chose to end up in that particular circumstance. Same word, but a completely different context. Subi.
I've been thinking about the question about free will. Do we really have a free will? Because we can't choose our thoughts. They just come and go as they want to. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
I guess there's no way really that we can objectively prove that we have free will, right? But in some senses, whether that's true in an abstract way is one of those questions that do not tend to edification, that the Buddha said, don't waste your time on. Like, is the universe infinite? Is it not infinite? Does anything exist after death? Does a Buddha, when they die, do they completely disappear? Like, you know, we could speculate a long time, or we could keep ourselves from wholeheartedly practicing because we harbor this doubt and we want to know this answer. So it can't be proven in some absolute way. And yet, I feel like I have a little space of choice, right? In this moment, there's some part of me that I don't have an infinite number of choices. My choices are constrained by my perspective and my conditioning and my learning and whatever, but I can see, you know, I can respond with impatience. I can respond with kindness. So to me, that is where the crux of practice is in like this moment, we have some space to make a couple choices, right? We have a couple choices. And by that, then we nudge things. We can't in this moment just decide to be a completely different person, or decide to, you know, shed all our karma or whatever. But we can move in a direction. Is that approach an answer? It's an answer. Brian.
So the question of free will is probably impossible to answer. So I kind of dumb it down to, does this make me freer to do this or that? If I do sit zazen, I am freer to be kind, to be thoughtful. And so that, in a way, frees my will, I feel. That's how I would say it. It expands how I can be in the world. And so that's I don't know if I'll ever get any farther than that in terms of answering, but I do. And it comes with a feeling. That's really the interesting thing. It's not just like kind of a proposition, a logical proposition, but you do feel less constrained, you know, more, you know, whether it's spacious, and just when you're able to think outside yourself, think of other people, it is a sort of sense of liberation, a little bit, some, but it's a, anyway, so that's the kind of,
well, and, you know, a lot of this stuff, when when we're talking about these subjective or existential things, once we go into the realm of the intellect, it gets very complicated. And those of us who are very intellectual definitely, you know, are troubled by the question of like, how can we know? How can we know anything, right? How do I, maybe this is all just, you know, because I don't even have free will. I just got this conditioned mind and I've got this delusion. And how do I know? How do I know anything is true? But that's also kind of a problem we're just dreaming up. I like to think of it as like when you place your hand in some water, do you know if it's warm or cold? How do you know that? You know, don't overthink it. You know it. Like, right? Like we, so in some senses it's like, we can't, you know, prove it in a scientific paper, but be like, yeah, that's, I had a moment of choice. That's, what else would choice feel like? Trusting our own experience, I guess. Ruth Ann, did you have something?
I embrace the line, the formless field of liberation, the root word of liberation. Mm-hmm. I see the open, huge book, the don't know mind. Mm-hmm. And if nothing else, modern man can hold that, that option. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, Cedar.
Some time ago, I was working with a budget, and you know, you have the various things on your budget, like groceries and rent and spending. But I recategorized them such that some of them were living expenses, and my spending then became, is it life enhancing or not?
Hmm.
So it went in that category to tell me, or it was kind of a nudge for me to know whether, is this enhancing my life or not? So it goes beyond like questions of, is this enhancing my health? Is this enhancing my relationships? And so for me, that's kind of that free will or not kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And, you know, it's so, I definitely am a very active and goal-oriented person, right? I get a vision of how something should look, could look, and then I get to work on it. And it's a very useful skill to have in this world, or proclivity, or whatever you want to call it. But then, you know, it's very easy to get fixated on that outcome. Right, that has to happen. And then it like whatever noble reasons were behind it, it becomes more of a compulsion. So I like to sometimes, just suggesting this in case anybody else finds it useful, just kind of like try to make my peace in a certain way with the worst possible outcome. Right? Like, all right, we got some family visitors coming, and, you know, I need to get the house clean, and I need to have some groceries, and I need to have the guest room set up, and, you know, get these things out of the way so I can spend some quality time with them. And then, like, you know, all these things that need to happen. And then if I ask myself, like, yeah, and what if they come and your house is dirty? What if they come and like there's not sheets on the bed yet? What if they come and like you say, oh, there's no food in the house, should we go to the grocery store? I mean, like, and that's a really like relatively light situation, but you know, we can also make our peace with, like, I don't know. I realize when we're just working with things this way, it's in some senses it's not like really facing the worst case scenario. But at least in terms of anticipation, we can make peace with, like, yeah, maybe I'll die. maybe I will lose my health. Maybe I will. I mean, part of my, I think I've told this story before, but one of the early rewards of practice, I've just gotten involved with Zen practice. And my, one of my great, it's not a great fear in the sense that it wasn't paralyzing or whatever. I was able to fly on planes, but just what kept going through my mind was like, all right, you know, we're falling out of the sky, we're going to crash. And I just like, when I thought about those last few minutes of just like, I was just like, no, that's not how my life can end. No, like, cause it would just be like terror. It would just be like, you know, it's like my life would just be, you know, ruined, just like taken completely out of my hands and horrible. And so I always have that in my mind of just like this complete loss of control. And then at a certain point, I just thought, well, all right, last few moments, scream the hell, you know, I was going to be like, and like, who cares? who cares? Why would that be something that I should live in anxious fear of? I what do you expect? What a terrifying way to go. You spend the last few minutes screaming. It's not that big a deal. Like, you know, so maybe it's more of like, I have a attachment to kind of being under, you know, of self-control. So I'm, you know, if I lose my self-control, then a sense like I'm destroyed, I'm obliterated, right? Making your peace with the worst case scenario. I mean, not to say that like there's any reason to excuse our current society's homeless situation. And yet, you go and you just talk to some people who do not currently have shelter. They're just people. They got their way that they make a living, and they may not want to be there. It may not be easy, maybe dangerous, all those kinds of things. And yet they're not like, it's not a other situation. It's just more life. And any one of us would just, we would just find a way or not. Any last minute ideas or questions? All right. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water. The mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time. All honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom. Maha Prajna Paramita. Oh, and one more thing. I'll just say, so go about your life and notice those times where you really are at ease and feeling like whatever you're doing is optional. Just like really like study that feeling. Become familiar with that feeling. And then like, how could I imagine feeling that in another circumstance? Thank you all for coming.
Thank you. Thank you.